Welcome to Guide to the Cosmos on webtalkradio.net with your host, Dr. Robert Piccioni, physicist, public speaker, and author of Everyone's Guide to Atoms, Einstein, and the Universe, and his new second book, Can Life Be Merely an Accident? With Robert as our guide to the cosmos, we will explore the frontiers of science and participate in the exciting discoveries of physics, astronomy, and cosmology. Now, providing public access to science, here's your host, Dr. Robert Piccioni.
Thank you for joining us, and welcome back. Today we will peek into a black hole and find out what lurks within nature's most destructive monster, which might also turn out to be a source of unlimited energy that's free and clean. And black holes could also be a source of eternal rebirth for the universe and for life itself. So are black holes devils or angels? Or possibly both? We've posted some helpful images on our website, so go to guidetothecosmos.com. Click on the microphone icon and pull up the images for today's show, A Peek into a Black Hole. Now, black holes have captured our imagination and filled us with terror since they were first conceived. They are gravity gone wild, so powerful that they rip holes in our universe. If you fall in, not a single atom of your body will ever return to our universe for all eternity. Would you come out in another universe? Would you be in oblivion forever? Well, let's take a peek and see if we can find out. Image number one is a sketch of a black hole. It's really quite simple. It just has two parts. You know, isn't that what we said about atoms a few weeks ago? Doesn't it seem that nature repeats its successful patterns? Well, the two parts of a black hole are the central singularity and a surrounding boundary called the event horizon. The central singularity is incredibly small, but it contains all of the black hole's mass. Again, that sounds a lot like an atom, doesn't it? The surrounding event horizon is not a physical object. Rather, it's the point of no return, the boundary that separates our universe from oblivion. And just as Earth's horizon is not a material object, but rather the limit of how far we can see due to the curvature of Earth's surface, a black hole's event horizon is also the limit of what we can see. The event horizon completely surrounds the singularity. From the outside, we can never observe whatever it is that lurks within. Black holes are created when massive stars die and collapse. When a star runs out of fuel and the fires of nuclear fusion burn out, the pressure that has balanced gravity and sustained the star for millions of years fades away. Gravity then wins the epic battle with pressure and squeezes the star's core into a smaller and smaller ball. As the ball shrinks, gravity grows ever stronger and the collapse accelerates. Eventually, a catastrophic explosion crushes the star's core and releases billions of times more energy each second than the star did when it twinkled serenely in the heavens. The star explodes in a supernova, and its outer layers are blown off into space. The star dies in one of the most violent events to occur since the Big Bang itself. And this explosion distributes vital elements like carbon, oxygen, and iron that were created in the star's core. Remember, those elements are created only in stars. This explosion plants seeds throughout the galaxy for future life. Despite the utter devastation, the star's remains form one of the most beautiful sights in nature, a planetary nebula. Now, the name planetary nebula is really a misnomer. It has nothing to do with planets. The nebula is entirely made of star dust. If the star is massive enough, the collapsed core will be too heavy and too dense for any force of nature to resist its inexorable gravity. In some sense, gravity is the weakest of nature's forces. Between any two subatomic particles, gravity is fully a trillion, trillion, trillion times weaker than any of the other forces. But unlike those other forces, gravity relentlessly accumulates as objects become larger and larger. And ultimately, for very massive objects, gravity's dominance is unchallenged. When the largest stars die, and I mean the heaviest 0.1% of all stars, superstars, if you will, then their collapsed cores are so massive that their own gravity crushes them down to virtually nothing. They collapse to something a trillion, trillion times smaller than a single atom. The entire mass of a star's core, perhaps 10 times as massive as our sun, millions of times more massive than the Earth, collapses into a ball vastly smaller than a single atom. Now, how is that possible? Well, it's possible because, contrary to our everyday experience, there really is nothing solid inside any material object. Matter, and the subatomic particles from which all material objects are made, really aren't rigid. They're more like springs. With enough force, even a bowling ball can be squeezed down to nothing. We don't see it that way because these springs are quite stiff in the face of the forces that we encounter in our everyday lives. But when faced with the enormous gravity of an imploding superstar, these springs give way like tissue paper and collapse to virtually nothing. When scientists first discussed black holes, it was believed that all the matter in the collapsing core really did compress into a point of zero width. Now most physicists believe that space is quantized, that it's made of minute little blocks, that there is a smallest possible bit of space that cannot be subdivided. So we believe now that black holes collapse down to just one of these little blocks. This smallest size is called the Planck length, named after Einstein's mentor, Max Planck. It's fabulously small indeed. It's a millionth of 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 an inch. And if you lost count of how many millionths, that was 5 millionths. In other words, as a decimal fraction, that's a 1 in the 30th decimal digit. Now, you might say, isn't this the ultimate hair splitting? I mean, really, can there be any difference between zero and a number that's that incredibly tiny? Well, actually, there is a huge difference if you look at it in another way. The mass density of a superstar crushed into a Planck length is an incredibly large number, but if it were crushed down to zero size, the mass density would be infinity. And physicists hate infinity. They hate it when our equations say that something comes out to be infinite, because that makes the math impossible and we get nonsense. And we do believe that nonsense is not the proper portrayal of the real world. So we are much happier having the Planck length being the end of smallness. You are listening to Guide to the Cosmos on webtalkradio.net. I am your host, Robert Piccioni, and today we are taking a peek into a black hole. I want to welcome again our new sponsor, cruisedirect.com. When you are planning your next cruise, the best place for comparing prices and itineraries is CruiseDirect.com. You can choose your cruise by destination, cruise line, or budget. CruiseDirect.com is your online destination for cruising. We'll be right back after these messages.
Explore Dr. Piccioni's website, GuideToTheCosmos.com, and check out the spectacular discounts that are available to you, our radio audience. Robert's first book, Everyone's Guide to Atoms, Einstein, and the Universe, makes the exciting discoveries of modern physics, astronomy, and cosmology understandable for everyone. And it was just selected as the best science book of the year by National Best Books. As Robert says, you don't have to be a great musician to appreciate great music, and the same is true for science. If you can change money, you can understand Einstein. Robert's second book, Can Life Be Merely an Accident?, describes how precisely tuned the universe is to support life, and shows how amazingly improbable that is. Go to Robert's website and send us your questions, comments, and suggestions for future shows. That's GuideToTheCosmos.com.
We're back, taking a peek into a black hole. So we've talked so far about the singularity, the extraordinarily small and extraordinarily dense center of every black hole, the smallest and densest object in the universe, but not infinitely small and not infinitely dense. What about the event horizon itself? Well, as we said before, it's the boundary between what we can see and what we can't see that lurks inside the black hole. In some sense, it's the edge of a hole that has been ripped out of our universe by the singularity. Anything, or anyone, that crosses the event horizon will disappear from our sight forever, and not one atom of that thing or person will ever return to our universe for all eternity. It's the ultimate one-way street. The event horizon is not a material object. You can't touch it or feel it or measure it. It's just the set of locations in space where the escape velocity from the black hole's gravity equals the speed of light. Now, wow, what was that? What did that mean? Well, many of us have heard of escape velocities before. It's how fast something has to move away from a massive object to escape its gravity. If you throw a ball up into the air, what we're used to seeing is that the ball slows down, eventually stops for an instant, and then falls back down to Earth. That's because we haven't thrown the ball up fast enough. If you threw the ball up at 25,000 miles an hour, hundreds of times faster than the best baseball pitcher, the ball would zoom up into the air, it would slow down, but it would never come to a full stop, and it would fly off into outer space and never return to Earth. That's because 25,000 miles per hour is the escape velocity from the surface of the Earth. Now, if Earth were more massive, the escape velocity from its surface would be more than 25,000 miles per hour. And if the Earth were smaller but had the same mass, in other words, if you squeezed it and made it denser, then the escape velocity would be higher because its surface would then be closer to the gravitating center. On the real Earth, if you climbed to the top of Mount Everest, the escape velocity would actually be a little bit less because that's further from the center of the Earth. But the escape velocity would only drop about 17 miles an hour, so it's probably not worth that strenuous climb. For a black hole, which is millions or even trillions of times more massive than Earth, the escape velocity is a very large number indeed. And that velocity gets higher and higher as one gets closer and closer to the singularity. So as you approach the singularity, at some point, the escape velocity will become equal to the speed of light. That's 671 million miles per hour, the fastest speed that anything can travel. That point where you reach the escape velocity equaling the speed of light is the event horizon. Inside the event horizon, the escape velocity is more than the speed of light. And since nothing, not even light, can travel faster than that, nothing inside the event horizon can move fast enough to escape the black hole's gravity. Thus, not even light can come out of a black hole, and that's why it's called black. It's called a hole because if you fall in, you will never come out. Now let's suppose some intrepid soul really wanted to peek into a black hole in person. What would happen? Let's say that we're going to stay in our spaceship at a safe distance, far away, and watch this idiot, this poor fellow, don a spacesuit, exit the hatch, and take the plunge toward the black hole. It turns out this guy is a physicist. I mean, who else would do this? And he's intent on making precise measurements, discovering new science, hoping to win fame, a tenured university professorship, and ultimately a Nobel Prize. So what happens to this nudnik? It turns out what he thinks happens and what we think happens will be very different, thanks to Einstein. He sees himself falling faster and faster in the immense gravity of the black hole. He blows past the event horizon as if it wasn't even there. In fact, there really isn't any material substance at the event horizon, so he won't see anything different. But as soon as he passes the event horizon, he exits our universe. We will never see or hear from him ever again. As Caltech's eminent black hole-ologist, Professor Kip Thorne, once said, our physicist colleague suffers a fate worse than death, the inability to publish. As he gets closer, the tidal force of gravity, which we talked about a few weeks ago in our show, Gravity and the Three R's, becomes ever stronger. It pulls him in head first. He feels his head being pulled one way and his feet being pulled the opposite way. He feels his four sides being squeezed inward, and he becomes what all Americans would like to be, but few of us are, tall and thin. Then he becomes very, very tall and very, very thin, because the tidal forces get ever stronger as he falls, and finally his body succumbs. Astrophysicists have a highly technical term for his fate. They say he suffers spaghettification. Ultimately, his remains reach the singularity, arriving at nearly the speed of light, there to remain in oblivion forever. Well, maybe. More on that later. But we, from the spaceship, will see something quite different happening to our poor friend. We see him fall faster and faster until he gets close to the event horizon. And while he blew past it without even noticing, what we see is that he starts to slow down, and eventually he comes to a complete stop on the surface of the event horizon. We actually never see him going through the event horizon. This is because we see time itself slow down and eventually come to a complete stop in his reference frame. Einstein's theory of general relativity explains why, as we discussed in one of our earlier shows, "Hey Einstein, what time is it?" From the sensors in his spacesuit, we see his watch running slower. We see his heart beating slower. And we see his brain waves waving slower. We see everything in him and around him come to a complete stop when he reaches the event horizon. His heart will never beat again, but he will not exactly die because nothing about him can ever change. Because without time, there is no change. The image of him that we see will get ever dimmer and ever redder, And in about a minute or so, depending on the mass of the black hole, his image will fade away and never be seen again. But in principle, his image and the image of everything that fell into the black hole will be preserved on the surface of the event horizon forever. So we on the spaceship saw a very different outcome than did our foolish physicist. He would have told us, if he still could, that he plunged into the singularity, accelerating the whole way, and blew right past the event horizon without even noticing. While we saw him come to a complete stop at the event horizon and never pass inside. So who's right? Surely he either went in or he didn't. Well, the truth is that both views are correct, each in their own frame of reference, and neither frame of reference is more correct than any other. That's the beauty and the mystery of relativity. You can see now why it took decades for people to understand and accept Einstein's ideas. Now, I've been told that NASA is recruiting volunteers for the first mission into a black hole. Are there any takers out there? If so, send me an email through my website, and I'll be happy to manage your investments until you return. After all, it's the least I can do for science. Now, let's take a peek, very carefully, at a real black hole. Image number 2 on the website shows the black hole in Cygnus A. It's 600 million light years away, and that's almost 4,000 million, million, million miles. Even though Cygnus A is the strongest radio source ever detected in the entire universe, it's too far away to pick up on your radio dial. Since it can't speak for itself, you'll just have to listen to me as I tell you all about it. In the center of this image is a black hole with a mass 1 billion times more than the mass of our sun. That's an awful lot, but actually the heaviest black hole that's ever been detected is 10 times heavier than that. All of that mass is concentrated at the center of the black hole, which is in the center of the small white dot in the middle of this image. Now, you can't see the black hole itself. After all, it's black. So what you see is the radiation emitted by the gas that's falling toward the black hole's event horizon. In a sense, it's the death wail of massive interstellar gas clouds, doomed stars, and the odd planet. You can also see two enormous jets shooting out to each side. This is because this black hole is rotating very rapidly, and it has an immense magnetic field that emanates from its north and south poles. Charged particles are sometimes knocked away by the gas collisions before they cross the event horizon, and some of these particles spiral out along the magnetic field lines, moving in this case at over 200 million miles per hour. They're like giant flamethrowers blasting through the galaxy. These death rays span 3 million, million, million miles. That's 5 times the entire width of the Milky Way galaxy. It's a good thing Cygnus isn't just around the corner. Image number 3 on the website is a NASA illustration showing how all of this works. The artist has imagined a black hole, which is on the left, eating a nearby star, which is shown on the right in red. Gas from the unfortunate star is streaming toward the black hole and collects in what we call an accretion disk that swirls around the outside of the event horizon, like water swirling down the mother of all drains. As the gas moves closer, it swirls faster, Collisions between gas particles raise its temperature to millions of degrees or even more. At those temperatures, the gas emits radiation from radio waves all the way up to X-rays or even gamma rays. And that's what makes the accretion disk visible. We see this radiation and we can detect the presence of the accretion disk and the corresponding black hole. In this image, you also see the two jets that are streaming out along the north and south magnetic field lines of the black hole. And again, these jets contain particles that were ejected from violent collisions within the accretion disk itself. Are black holes merely evil monsters destroying everything within their grasp? Well, yes, they are that, but they can also be incredibly useful. We certainly could one day extract virtually unlimited clean energy from a black hole, if only there happened to be one in a convenient place. Not too far, but certainly not too close. Image number 4 shows a plan conceived by cosmologist Sir Roger Penrose to extract virtually unlimited amounts of perfectly clean energy from a rapidly rotating black hole. Here, a civilization on a planet orbiting a black hole launches a rocket ship filled with trash. The rocket loops around the black hole, which is shown on the right, and dumps its trash right at the event horizon. As Penrose showed, if done correctly, 100% of the mass of that trash will be converted into accelerating the rocket ship and increasing its kinetic energy. The rocket then returns home with more energy than it left with, and that extra energy can easily be converted into electricity or mechanical work energy. None of this takes any new technology whatsoever. All it takes is the right black hole in the right place. And there is absolutely no pollution in this process whatsoever. All the trash enters the black hole and is gone from our universe forever. We could throw away hazardous waste or garbage of any sort and convert 100% of its mass into energy. A black hole can be the ideal cosmic dumpster. Black holes might also be the creators of new universes, and thereby new life. One leading cosmologist, Lee Schmolin, has proposed that whenever matter collapses into a singularity, forming a black hole, it doesn't just stay there for all eternity, but actually blows out the other side, whatever that means, and creates a new universe in a new space and a new time. The collapse we see in our universe, he says, is just the beginning of the Big Bang of a new universe. If Schmolin is right, black holes will ensure that there will always be new universes and new life for all eternity. But all that is for another show. This show is just about to pass through its own event horizon. Thank you for tuning in. And remember, you are never too young or too old to wonder why.
Don't forget to explore Robert's website, guidetothecosmos.com, and check out the spectacular discounts on his books that are available to you, our radio audience. Send us your questions, comments, and suggestions for future show topics. That's guidetothecosmos.com. Goodbye.